Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about enthusiasm, because last time we talked about happiness, and people wanted to know the difference between happiness and enthusiasm, and they're not the same thing. Enthusiasm is something you can, well, okay, let's ask the question, and I won't tell you what I think until we get further in. Yes, it's supposed to be your show. This is true. And it's not a scripted show, of course. It goes where we take it. So, what's the difference between happiness and enthusiasm? Let's talk about that for a second, within our context, of course, within the context of a negotiation, a mediation, an alternative dispute resolution. What's the difference between happiness and enthusiasm? Because there is kind of a difference, right? Yes. This is a good point. Mohammed says that happiness is a feeling and enthusiasm is modeled. Happiness is a feeling and enthusiasm is modeled. Yeah. And that's kind of what I was going to say, because it's really true. You can show people enthusiasm. You can teach it to them. You can show them how to act so that they become enthusiastic and they want to participate and they become kind of self-starters. They go further than their actual minimum requirement for not being thrown out of the group, right? Because that's the idea of the thing. Because a lot of times, at least I see groups, and probably you do too, where the members are not, the participants are not so voluntary. They are, I do a lot of corporate, so I see a lot of groups where the people are part of a level of employment that's required to participate. Does that make sense to you? Yeah. They're not exactly there because they feel enthusiastic about the issues. In fact, sometimes it's kind of on their own time, not on company clock. But they're pretty much required to do it if they'd like to remain whatever level they're at. And usually it's pretty high level, so people want to remain. Does that make sense? Yeah, they're management level, administration level. And they're supposed to want to do whatever it is that we're doing. But it's on their own time, and they are sent, required. They can't refuse if they want to remain in their present employment spot. And it's not a question of, well, you can't replace me, because there's usually like 400, well, not 400, that's an exaggeration, but there's lots of people in line waiting for their spot. So they can't just go, well, what are you going to do about it if I don't show up? Well, the answer is bye-bye. You can be demoted, and somebody who's just dying to take your place will take your place. This leads to compliance, but neither happiness nor enthusiasm. In fact, compliance in this sense is kind of not happy and not too enthusiastic, right? Right. Well, we have to change that if we want to get anywhere. If we want to find an actual workable solution, we have to get more than physical bodies in the chair. Look, I showed up, check me in. But I don't got to participate, and I'm going to spend the entire thing texting. No. we need to really make a team out of this group of recalcitrant participants, right? Yeah, and it's no mean trick. We're going to need to really think about it, and we're going to need to really work on it. It can be done, of course, but we're going to need to pull out all of our abilities in order to really get this group to become a team. And a team has enthusiasm. And a team, because they are feeling enthusiastic, feels kind of happy to be there, right? Yeah, this is, I'm glad I'm here because now we can get this done. We can make a change that I really think is important. Hey, this is good. Mm-hmm. So happiness is a feeling, enthusiasm is modeled, is a good point. The leader can't really model happiness. I mean, you can, but it's easier to model enthusiasm, which leads to satisfaction and happiness, right? Yeah. Because enthusiasm in the leader leads to satisfaction, well, in the leader, but also the participants. And if you feel satisfied, if you feel enthusiastic, if you feel like you're getting someplace, well, don't you feel kind of happy that you're in this group, right? Happy that you're working on these issues, happy that something's being done, and that you're a part of the solution, and instead of kind of being a part of the problem? Well, aren't you pleased? Well, you must be, right? Which makes you happy, right? Yeah. So they are connected. They're not natural to joining one of our groups, right? They're not natural to a negotiation, a mediation, an alternative dispute resolution. In fact, a lot of times people are there because something's gone kind of sideways. It hasn't necessarily gone wrong. Maybe it has. I don't do family law, so hey. But something needs to be done about something that's not working, right? It's usually the reason that we're all there. Otherwise, if everything was going extremely well, well, we wouldn't be trying to hash something out. We wouldn't be trying to figure out what to do next, right? So just inherently speaking, it means that something is going on. Mm-hmm. It may not be that bad a thing, but it means that we need to solve a problem, or we wouldn't be there. So we're feeling enthusiastic now because we can see that there's a plan in place. We can see that this would indeed be a good thing. Ah, that's a very good point. Erica and others are saying that also you get more enthusiastic, which makes you a little happy, right? And enthusiastic when you can see you're in a really good group. You'd like to deal with the other people in this group, right? It's good to know them. You want to, it's good professionally, it's good friend-wise maybe, but this is a good group to be a part of. You look around and you go, oh, this ain't bad. We're going to make connections. I'm going to meet the other people that are on my level in, for example, because I do international, other countries. Other people in the business. I'm going to be part of a group that gets something done. My name will be in the success pile next time there's a review. Because I deal with people that get a lot of reviews, right? Because businesses like that, and especially corporate, fairly big ones, do like an annual review. Some of them do a quarterly review, which is quite a bit. But it means that you're a good team player. You're in the success group, right? Yeah, this is good. I thought it might be kind of a pain and it's taken my time and like that. But, oh, look around me. I think I'm feeling kind of enthusiastic that I've been chosen to be in this group. Because it's good. It's an honor. It's prestigious. It's good for my career. it's good for my advancement in the organization, because sometimes it's not a business thing. It might be an organization that you want to be the board member of or something, right? Yeah. So you look around, and as leader, in order to model enthusiasm, I don't believe in subtlety. I explain to people that it's a real good thing. Look around. If you can't figure out that this is really good, then get out. If you're not going to be enthusiastic and you're not going to participate and give 110%. Because I really expect people to run with the instructions, run with the assignments, really, really take them on seriously. Really think about this seriously, and not just when we're sitting together or meeting together. We don't always sit in the same room, but because Skype exists, right? Right. But I want you to take this seriously and with enthusiasm and with a can-do spirit, right? Because we need something to be done. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. But it's fabulous that you've been asked your opinion. Fabulous that you've been honored to be one of the change makers, right? Hey, this is really good. Look at this group. We're really going to get somewhere. And we're really going to know someone and something when we're done, right? Yeah, I point this out. I point this out really a lot, how great our group is. How great it is to be in this group, right? And if somebody's a laggard, we're going to talk about what to do when that happens, right? Mm-hmm. Enthusiasm leads to participation in the success progress, right? Yeah. I want to be part of the success. Let's do it. Mm-hmm. This is a good point, too, that Hussein and others are making, that enthusiasm of the leader leads to confidence in their leadership. Enthusiasm of the leader leads to confidence in their leadership. Let's talk in a minute about how to show our enthusiasm. This is a good point, too, that's very necessary, that Lee and others are talking about the enthusiasm of the employer for the process completion. Makes a difference between whether or not we're going to succeed. The difference between happiness and, well, not. Because the employer will be happy if their requirements are met. But let's talk about their enthusiasm for seeing the process completed. And for having some patience maybe too. Mm-hmm. What should we do? Let's talk about that too. And then we're going to get to the meat of this. We've talked about this in general terms now. What should we as leaders actually do to encourage enthusiasm? Because there's tricks to it. We can actually encourage people to feel enthusiastic and pleased with the process, happy, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. There's lots of folk that have been here before. Thank you for mentioning this because you know I'm going to, yes. People talk about the civility rules to create a convivial atmosphere, right? We need to model civility and enthusiasm. This is true. You cannot ask people to do something that you yourself do not do. So you're going to have to be a model of civility and enthusiasm. We'll talk about what happens if that fails you for a minute there. Because after all, we are human. And sometimes something gets on our last nerve. Ever had that? I try not to. I've been doing this a lot of years, and I'm pretty good at not having things get to me. But sometimes, well, we'll talk about it in a minute. I guess we should. People are going, what you going to say? Sometimes losing your civility and then apologizing for it and showing that that's what had happened is a good model for the participants to show what to do and that your patience for the civility rules is getting a little thin and repercussions will occur. Does that make sense? It's kind of, I don't do it, okay, don't lose your civility accidentally because you've got control, right? And you're modeling it. But there's a point at which you have to react and then explain your reaction because it breaches the civility rules. Does that make sense to you? But it should be, it should look unconscious, but it should be very calculated. Yeah, it's kind of a negotiation tool, a negotiation trick, I suppose it is, right? Mm-hmm. And what should we as leaders do to encourage enthusiasm? How about creating some empathy, right? Which, remember, is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Who should we have empathy for? Well, how about each other, the other participants? How about our employer? And remember, on this show, we call whoever had the brains to bring you in as leader the employer, even if that's not true, if that's not the relationship. It's just a generic term that it's like participant. It's just a generic term. It doesn't designate an actual employer-employee relationship, although it could. But the employer is the higher up, the one who brought you in, the one that you might or might not be making reports to, probably are making reports to, discussing it with, maybe not a formal report. So we're going to call that person, group, entity, board, whatever it is that brought you in, we're going to call them the employer. It does not necessarily mean that they are. It's just what we're calling them. Okay? Got that straight? Who else should we have empathy for? How about outsiders? How about our opposition? Maybe we're not as far away as we think we are. Right? And how about some empathy for me, the leader? And some empathy for the other leaders, even if they're not opposing, if they're not oppositional groups, the other leaders who are also trying to do that. Sometimes there's a whole bunch of us, and we're all doing our very best. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's get down to this. How about happiness is a feeling and enthusiasm is modeled? I like that as a concept, right? Mm-hmm. What does that mean? Ah, good point. Muhammad says it means that happiness is personal to each person. Happiness is personal. But enthusiasm is for the group. Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Suki says that enthusiasm is contagious. Yeah. Happiness is personal. Some people don't actually get happy very much, and they don't actually feel happy about business stuff. It's just in their personality, in their makeup, right? But they can become enthusiastic about seeing something through. And sometimes the people that are don't seem to be happy because it's unfair to judge. Happiness is personal. Muhammad is correct. And how can I judge your happiness? Maybe you're happy, but you just don't show it very readily. That's not your way. Some people are like that. They just don't. They're happy. They're glad that if you ask them, they say, "Yeah, of course." It's like the old joke about the husband and the wife said, "We've been married for 50 years, and you never say you love me." And the husband says, "Well, I said I loved you the day we got married. If anything changes, I'll let you know." Because some people just aren't demonstrative. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. So, and if you ask them if they're happy, they're like, "Well, why? I guess so," because they don't analyze it. But they're sometimes the most dedicated and enthusiastic participants because they're detail-oriented, a lot of them. And that's fabulous. And they really get down to what's going on, right? Yeah. And so happiness is enthusiasm for a lot of people and kind of really working at it. It's enthusiasm, right? Yeah, you don't have to be giggly to be happy and enthusiastic. You just have to be determined, right? Yeah, they're kind of determined. That's a good phrase. Thank you, Thomas. They're determined to see it through, to have success, to progress, to make this work. That's fabulous. That's enthusiasm. And whenever it is, Suki's right, enthusiasm, determination, real buckle down and get this done, is contagious because people don't want to be second best. And also the people that are truly, truly into it and truly working kind of expect something's here, right? Expect some cooperation. So expect enthusiasm also. Some people are just more outgoing than others. It's really true. I think most of us as leaders tend to be extroverts. That's why we're leaders. We're kind of outgoing. We can talk to anybody. I talk to strangers. I really do. Just to chat, just because I'm interested in people, just because you never know what you learn, what you know, a friend to make, right? And then people actually remember me years later. It's very strange because I'm a real extrovert, and I wasn't always. I actually focused on it. I used to be extremely shy when I was a child, didn't talk to anybody. I don't know what happened. No, I do know what happened. I actually made a personal decision to be more outgoing, to have more friends, right? Yeah. I didn't have any friends. And I was like, well, how can that be? There's nothing wrong with me. And then I realized it's because I never reached out. I didn't have any friends because I wasn't a friend, right? Yeah. So, but anyway, we tend to be extroverts. And so we tend to think that people who aren't are not happy or enthusiastic. That's not necessarily true. They're just not showing it. They're not emoting. They're not visibly giving a sign of it. But it doesn't mean they're not happy and enthusiastic. It just means that, well, it's not their way to be real talkative about it. This is an interesting thought. I think it's actually true. Virginia says that enthusiasm can be modeled and taught. That you, the idea that you can teach people enthusiasm. You can show people enthusiasm. You can teach them to follow you. So I suppose that's teaching enthusiasm, right? You can give instructions that make participation easy and clear, which leads to enthusiasm, right? Remember that instructions are very important. People have an assignment. They hear what you said in their own. Remember this. When you read, this was pointed out to me and I went, yeah, that's true. Especially when you read an assignment or read an instruction, and even when you hear it and you think about it again, you're reading and thinking about it, and thinking about it even orally, in your own voice, in your own head. You are not doing it in the voice of the person that gave you the instructions. So what you're doing is you're kind of modifying. You're kind of thinking about it. You're kind of, this is what this meant, right? You're interpreting because you're reading it in your own voice. It's very important to understand that that's what your participants are doing. They don't know it from your head. They know it from their head. So you must repeat, must get straight that they understand. so that you can teach them to be enthusiastic because they understand what they're supposed to do. If you don't understand what you're supposed to do, you don't have enthusiasm because you're lost. And how can you have enthusiasm if you're feeling lost, right? This is another interesting point, that if you have enthusiasm, it leads to satisfaction. And a lot of people are saying that that satisfaction is happiness within our context. I mean, you may not be exuberantly happy, but you're happy, you're satisfied. It's going well, right? It's progressing forward. We're doing better than you thought we would. That's a good sign, right? Yeah, let's keep striving. Let's keep innovating. Let's keep thinking about this and working it through, right? Yeah. So happiness is really satisfaction. Yeah. If you think about it, that's actually true. This is true, too. George and quite a few other people are talking about the fact that if you have satisfaction and enthusiasm, it makes you work together well. It makes a circle. Sometimes the happiness, the satisfaction, and the enthusiasm come from being a good team and working together well. And also it feeds it. And then you go, well, you know, this is a really good group. And Sue's a really good leader. And we seem to really be forging forward to a workable outcome. Because remember, we like theory. We like it a lot. But we don't really dwell on theory too much because we're trying to make a workable outcome that will change something and that we can really rework and make for the future, right? Yeah, and not just a pretty statement. We are not politicians. You know how they just make a pretty statement. And it's like, really? On what planet did you come from? Fabulous. Mm-hmm. So we want to have a satisfaction of being able to work well together, being able to really, really work in the future when the leader's not sitting there and something needs to be worked out about this outcome. Maybe things have changed. Maybe there's been an unintended consequence that nobody foresaw, and we now have to do something about it. You see that things modify over the years. Especially if it's a progress and outcome that's going to deal with a lot of people and with some sort of policy, because a policy, a law, something like that, because it means that people are affected, and sometimes how that works is different. It changes. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean it changes for the worse. It just means that it changes, and that's just a statement of fact. Yes, people are talking about celebrating every successful step because that leads to enthusiasm and to satisfaction. Sometimes something is kind of a process that's going to take a while. And you forget how far away you were to begin with, is what it really is. We're human beings. And we forget how far away we were when we started. Because it seems, this is taking forever. We're not getting anywhere. But the answer is yes, we are. We really are getting somewhere serious. It's just that sometimes things take a little while. Yeah. And it doesn't make it bad. It just means that sometimes things take a little while. Yeah. And so it is a process that we truly do need to patient with, right? So we need to celebrate every success to show how far we've come, right? To remind ourselves that, wow, we really are making progress. We really are having success. Bring in the cake. No, but you need to really state it. You need to really celebrate it. You need to really, really thank the people that have worked especially hard up until now to reach this point. Let's keep going, right? Yeah, we celebrate all kinds of nice things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, and really, as you celebrate each successful step, let's analyze what to do next. Let's analyze what made it successful. Let's analyze what our next step is going to be so that we keep pushing forward. We keep taking steps, and we don't just go, well, that worked. Let's kind of lay low, even though we haven't gotten to the successful outcome we were hoping for. No, let's celebrate and let's analyze how we got this far, because nobody thought we would, and what we're going to do next. Yes, very important. What are we going to do next? We're going to talk about participation in the process is our next one. And enthusiasm for that participation. Remember, I just told you that sometimes I see groups that are forced. I actually don't have any subtlety. I actually explained that this is not a good attitude. I know that you're all here because it's a requirement and this is your free time. Even if it's their work time, people don't like to be bothered, right? It's going to be extra work. I'm going to have to think about it on the weekends. And I actually acknowledge that. And I acknowledge that that is not going to be the case. We're going to have enthusiasm. We're going to work hard. We're going to get this done. I also tell them something that seems to be a surprise at all times. I tell them that the faster we get this done, the faster we get this done and don't have to come to these meetings and don't have to deal with each other. And we could just implement and then go forward from there, right? Yeah. Sometimes what we're doing is not even our job. It is a recommendation to the people I call the employer, the higher-ups. Sometimes it won't even be more work if we succeed because the next level is going to implement. And I'm going to deal with them, but they're not. Good point that you could point out that it is, Janice and others are talking about the fact that sometimes if you're really good with the participation, right, and you really work hard, sometimes you get to be the next level and do the implementation. This is good. The concept is that we need complete buy-in. That may be an Americanism, and of course this is a global show, but buy-in means that everybody is doing their best. Everybody's got enthusiasm. Everybody is really working as hard as they can, and they have understood the instructions, which is very important. Remember, your instructions must not just be clear to you. They must be clear to the person that's going to do them, right? Right. Because a lot of times we give instructions that we think, wow, that we really nailed that. That was a really good instruction. We've got it. And the answer is, I don't know. Because the person didn't understand it, or they wouldn't have gone sideways, which means that you need to understand the process and the assignments. Remember, understand the process, too. I'm very transparent. I explain things. And you need to welcome questions as the leader. Because sometimes people really don't understand what's going on. And they either don't understand that they don't understand, which means that you don't understand that they don't understand, right? Or they're too embarrassed to ask. Because they look around and everybody's nodding their head and going, oh, yeah, I got this. Mm-hmm. Piece of cake. And they're thinking to themselves, oh, my God, I haven't the vaguest notion what I'm supposed to do. But did I mention that everybody else is nodding going, yeah, got this. And so they don't want to pipe up and ask because they're their peers. They're going to report back that somebody is an idiot. and like that. Ooh, those are bad things, right? So they don't want to admit it. They don't want to admit that they're sunk. You need to have them admit it. You need to have them admit that they don't understand what they're supposed to do. This does not mean that they need to stand up in the middle of the room in front of everybody and ask the questions. It means that somewhere along the line you have to be open to questions, though, and allow them to ask because they need to. And they don't want to have everybody know that they need to. Got it? Got it. Right? Right. Yeah. It's very important to know that. Very important to know, this is not working. Let's find out why. Let's find out what's happening. Let's find out what to do about it. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. So participation in the process is a really instruction-filled participation, and we need to understand that they understand. I like to actually, sometimes it's awkward to actually ask people if they understand. They're just going to nod their head yes. So I like to give the same instruction more than once, stated in different ways, so that it gets in, so that it gets understood, right? Mm-hmm. Now, we're talking about participation in the process breeds enthusiasm. How about employer participation in the process? Remember the employers, whoever is in charge and brought us in? Sometimes the employer is not a human. It was made up of humans, but it could be a board, an organization, something that took a vote. They need to participate in the process too. Because when things go a little sideways, and they will, because the employer has a fixed idea of what they want you to do, and sometimes what they want you to do is not really what they want, but they've decided on it, so they you need to be able to make them more flexible. Not necessarily make them change their minds, well, kind of, but make them more flexible. So that what they want you to do becomes more clear, becomes something that is reasonable, becomes something that, well, that you can do, right? Right. And so they need to really be in the process and participate and understand where you say we need to be flexible about this. Or how about the sentence that often occurs, we're going to need more funding. We're going to need more time. We're going to need more research. We're going to need to bring in some experts so that we can avoid the law of unintended consequences, right? Because we're not, if we implement this, it's going to have consequences. Let's find out what they are. And none of us really knows. I sit in groups sometimes when I'm not the leader, and I like committees and stuff, usually charity committees, and they talk about, for example, I just had this. I'm on the board of an organization that I really like, and I like the people on the board. We eat lunch. Well, actually, we eat dinner usually. But anyway, there's a lot of reasons why I'm enthusiastic about it that are kind of peripheral. But you got to think about that when you think about your participants and think about the fact that a convivial atmosphere, which we're going to talk about, leads to happiness and is underrated as an idea because it makes people want to come. And if you've really got a convivial atmosphere and people want to come, they're going to need to work or they're not going to be welcome to come. It makes a circle. It's very underrated about convivial atmosphere and the food and like that. It is not. It's the reason that people come sometimes. It's the peripherals. It's the other people. They want to see them. The party that goes on. You've done stuff like that, right? You don't necessarily give such a rat's ass about the idea. the issues, but you become enthusiastic about them and interested, and you weren't to begin with because you started out because you wanted to join the party. You wanted to be invited. It was a good thing to do. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. That's a really valid reason to participate, right? Yeah. You don't always have to be enthusiastic about the issue. So anyway, this group is trying to find out how to get more young people interested. And it is true that they are aging. The group is aging, and they're not getting a lot of young people to join, young being 30s, because it's a kind of a dignified group, and you have to be, we have to be interested in the networking part, really. And so they sit there and they talk about the millennials, like you talk about the aliens. None of us are one. None of us, so we don't know. We look at research about them. And I said, which was kind of shocking, probably throw me out of the group. I said, why don't we ask some millennials? Because we know quite a few. A lot of the people on the board have children that are millennials. You know what I mean? It's not like you'd have to go fetch some from the moon, which is hard and expensive and like that. Why don't we get them in a room, have a think tank, have a focus meeting, and ask them what they would find appealing and stop guessing. You see? So a lot of times you need to think about what the unintended consequences are, and you need to bring in some experts. Are those people experts? Well, yeah, they are. They're experts on being millennials because they are millennials. And they've got different ideas about privacy, for example, different ideas about what's fun, different ideas about how society should work, different ideas about meetings and things, right? Right. Yeah. Let's ask some. Ooh, what a concept. Yay. Yeah. And it was really, there was a hushed silence as people tried to digest the idea that we could actually talk to somebody who was a different generation than us. Yes, I volunteered to lead the discussion because I didn't want anybody to faint. They're old. They could faint. They could have the vapors. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Never mind. So we're going to have the employer participate. We might have to call in some experts. How about what Recipe for Peace Now calls the invisible participants? Thank you. A lot of you are bringing them up. Sometimes our participants, the people we can see, are feeling enthusiastic because we've modeled enthusiasm. We're going to talk about modeling civility in a minute, right? Excuse me. Sorry, took a sip of water there. I know, yes, my sinuses are still funny. And sometimes are the people we can see, the participants, the employer, like that, are feeling enthusiastic, and they're serious about it, and they're happy, and like that. But they're reporting to someone, maybe not strictly as in an actual written report, but they are consulting with someone who makes whose opinion makes a difference to them. Makes a difference to their reaction, makes a difference to what they think. And this person, this consult, is really impacting how they're reacting. Recipe for Peace Now calls these the invisible participants, because they kind of are. I like to find out who they are, if somebody's doing that. And sometimes you can see that when they were by themselves, they reacted one way. And then when they came back, they had an entirely different idea. They had kind of a different outlook on it. And this is a good sign that you've got someone who's influencing the participants. I'd like to know who they are and to bring them into the loop. And I think of them kind of as experts, the invisible participants, because usually they're invisible, but they're having impact because they don't want to be named. They want to be anonymous. I would like to talk to them in confidence. I would like to hear what they have to say. I would like them to come and participate. If it's Skype, they could be silent but be in the room, right? But I do tell everybody that we've got someone who's an expert and they wish to remain anonymous. They're gonna listen and they're gonna participate, but we're gonna call them Jane. Right? Yeah. And usually they're not criminals or something. Yeah, people want to know how come they want to be anonymous. There's something wrong with them. No. We don't deal with I don't know, people that need their voices scrambled because they're running drugs. They're usually people who don't want to be named, they're interested in the outcome. They're interested in what happens because it impacts them. But they don't want to be named because it impacts them. See, it makes a circle. And they're the people getting the benefit now. Their employment, for example. They are the administrator. They are the person enforcing the present-day rules or something like that. And if people knew that they were helping to change them, it would not be good for their employment, for example. But as people, they really think that the rules should be changed because something is, well, not fair, not relevant, not keeping up with the times because circumstances change, especially nowadays with technology and stuff. Things change kind of quickly. And sometimes the people who are in charge know that things are really need to change, but they don't exactly know what to do, and they don't exactly want to back one horse. You got the idea? Because there's different groups, there's different think tanks working on it. A lot of times I have that. We're not the only group working on it. They've made like think tanks, like suggestion committees, right? And they wanted the overlying organization, the bosses, want to know what to do about something, and they want lots of opinions. And so they don't want to back us exactly by putting their name to it, but they like our concept the best and think it's the most workable. These people would like to remain anonymous. You can see the point. If it doesn't work out and we're not the winner, as in our solution is not selected, well, they don't want to backed it, right? Because they don't want anybody to know that they kind of thought that. It's just, it's smart. It's human nature. It's protecting your employment, usually. But they're fabulous because they're fabulous experts. They know how things work and what the unintended consequences will be. And they know what the unintended consequences of the other ideas will be. And sometimes the leaders of the very, in fact, this often happens, the leaders of the various think tanks make a group too. I mean, we talk to each other. We don't work in a vacuum, right? And sometimes we need to get together. Sometimes we actually talk to each other and we decide amongst ourselves that everything has merit and everything's got a problem. Let's put everybody together and figure out what to do about this. Let's combine resources, right? Now, sometimes this is not always. I mean, we've still got our own groups. But let's share some info. let's not work in silence, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Our next topic is that would participants have confidence in their leadership, and this would give them better confidence, right? Because it means that your leader knows something. When participants have confidence in their leadership, they feel more enthusiastic, right? Yes, this is true, too. Uh-huh. Matthew says it also enhances your reputation. It certainly does. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, you're the best group of all because, well, everybody wants to be in your group because you're leading it. Mm-hmm. So it enhances your reputation as a leader. There's nothing wrong with that sentence. That's actually an extremely good sentence. You want to be the one that everybody wants, right? This is true, too. If you're the leader that people have the most confidence in, because you're the finding a successful outcome, right? Yeah. Then you've got not only enhanced your reputation with the employer, remember we're using a generic term, and with the community, but also with your peers and the peers of your participants, right? Yes, a lot of times I've got a group that's being formed where they may be all on a certain level, but not all of them get to participate. And people have to put in a resume, essentially speaking. They have to compete to be a participant. If you'll excuse me for 1 second, I'm actually going to blow my nose. Hang on a second. Sorry about that. It does show it's a live show, though. It's kind of like, oh, that's nice. No time delay. Fabulous. They have to compete to be in the group, right? And a lot of people apply, and we have a selection. We actually have interviews and look at the resumes and like that because it's good to be chosen, right? Yeah. It's a competition. It's good to win. And that, of course, makes them more enthusiastic, too, and happier and enthusiastic. They start with enthusiasm because they have competed and they're a winner. Makes everybody happy. And then when they find out it really is a good group and my reputation is well-earned, then they become even more enthusiastic and happier and glad that they did it, right? Yeah, because usually these things take time and they take effort. And they take thought. And these are all sentences that are kind of a nuisance, time and effort and thought. And so you want to have picked the right one, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The next topic is employer enthusiasm. They have to really have enthusiasm too and not be short-lived. Sometimes the employer changes also. Especially in a corporate setting. And they have to be brought into the loop. They have to understand the importance of what's going on so that they truly feel enthusiastic also. Because they have to understand that there's flexibility. And sometimes circumstances do change. And they need to change. They need to stay on board. They need to not get panicky and run. You know how sometimes people, it didn't start out as their thing, and they get kind of, oh, I don't know if I should or not. Yeah. We're already in place. Come and join us. Come and see what we're doing. Come and participate. Come and understand. Right? Yeah. And that's why you need to actually involve them in the celebration of each step so they feel encouraged that we're moving forward. And remember that they usually have to report to somebody too, right? And that somebody has to feel encouraged that we're moving forward. And that's a very big sentence, because sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's something that needs to be really thought about, right, and explained. I have meetings with the employer on a regular basis to allow them to understand, to explain what's going on, to really move forward. Now, we've got not too much time. I apologize in advance. We are not going to make it to the recipes because we're having such a good conversation. And we're going to talk about how to encourage enthusiasm as leaders, because we need to. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways to encourage enthusiasm is to create a convivial atmosphere. I told you I belonged to a group where I didn't initially care much about the issues. I didn't dislike the issues, but I was kind of neutral about it, but I wanted to be in the group. I wanted to be asked. I wanted to be a participant because I wanted to be with the people. This is a perfectly valid reason. There's nothing wrong with that. And one of the ways to make a convivial atmosphere, yes, thank you, everyone. Lots of people are saying, have the civility rules, right? Yes. For those of you who are new, and thank you, everyone, for coming and for coming back. Yes. Mm-hmm. The civility rules at their very base say we will not be rude to one another. We will not be rude to one another. We will take turns speaking. We will not sigh, do body language that's do the modern passing of notes in class, which is texting to somebody next to us who giggles. No, 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 no. We will not be rude to one another. The civility rules need to be announced. I announce the civility rules as part of my transparency, even if I'm fairly certain that I don't have to. Even if I've seen this exact group before and I'm fairly certain that I don't have to, I announce them anyway, because everybody should know that they're in effect. The civility rules are in effect, right? Mm-hmm. Then, after you announce them, they must be enforced immediately, consistently, and fairly. Did you hear the word immediately? Also consistently and fairly. If you let things get out of hand and then say, you remember the civility rules? We're going to enforce them now. It's kind of too late. You need to really enforce the civility rules immediately and every single darn time. Now, how are we going to get this? Yes, thank you. It's a life lesson, right? Yeah, people learn. People actually tell me this, that they've used what they learned in my mediations and classes and workshops and like that all the time in their lives, with their families and stuff. So what is a life lesson in how to get along with other people that you don't think you're going to be able to get along with? Hey, this is good. You learn how to play nice. In order to have the civility rules be enforceable, you must deal with the employer, and you must find out what kind of power you're going to have to enforce. Because just saying them is nice, but sometimes you've got a bully, and they say what you're going to do about it. And the answer is, I'm going to have you fired or demoted. It's going to affect your pocketbook. It's going to affect your prestige. I'm going to throw you off this group. I'm going to tell everybody that you are a pill, right? That you're a bully, that you're refusing to cooperate, that you are attempting to waylay this group. Mm-hmm. You need to have power. You need to be able to enforce the civility rules with some sort of what you're going to do about it, right? And the what you're going to do about it has to be good, because otherwise people will find out they don't gotta, and then your group's going to deteriorate. It's just not going to work. So we need to be able to enforce the civility rules and remind people, which means the employer must back you, must really have your back. always remember, too, that we need to model the civility rules and the enthusiasm. You can't ask people to do something that you don't do yourself. You've got to be a good example. And I know that this is, we will talk about this for 2 minutes because that's how much time we've got. But if you, we have, the shows are archived on the website. We've done lots of shows with empathy and talked about it. So look for the ones that are kind of empathy related. You need to be able to form some empathy. And remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. To do this, you're going to ask the 5W questions: who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. You need to be able to really, really understand what you're dealing with. You need to have some empathy, some understanding between your participants so that they can relate to each other. You need it between your group, your participants, yourself, and the employer, so that they, and back and forth, the employer needs some empathy for understanding about what you're doing, so that it can be successful and be implemented. Because implemented is very important. It has to be workable, whatever we decide, and it has to be done, and not just go, oh, that's nice, now we'll shelve it and think about it later. No. Mm-hmm. Have some empathy for your outsiders and your opposition. Let's see how far away we are. Maybe not as far as we think, right? Yeah. And let's have some leader empathy, as in the participants understand what the leader wants, what the goal is, and how we're going to get there. Yeah. Real understanding. No, you do not necessarily have to ask all the questions, although you will get around to all of them. They do not have to be in that order. And that's a leadership decision. And it's a leadership decision whether to ask them in front of everybody. Yeah, sometimes you don't want to elicit the answer and go up and back with the questions in front of everyone. Sometimes it needs to be done in a more discreet manner, right? Maybe with a subcommittee. Maybe with just a few people. Something that you need to know that is not for publication, right? Yeah, very important. Mm-hmm. My friends, we are now out of time. Thank you so much for your participation. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on the website. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you for your participation. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.